Greetings, beloved family. I begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful. I bear witness that there is but one God. Welcome to the Black Agenda Conversation. Live here on social media, also on Time for an Awakening Radio, part of the Black Talk Radio Network out of Philadelphia. We are broadcasting live from Trinidad and Tobago and through the entire Caribbean, as well as the diaspora, to our brothers and sisters across the United States, Canada, and the United Kingdom, and everywhere else, to our people listening in Africa. We have, in the last 6 months in particular, made a number of connections with our brothers and sisters working on the grassroots level as activists in Kenya, Uganda, Ghana, Nigeria, Ethiopia, and South Africa. And the work continues. The Black Agenda Project organization is networking with our people. And of course, one of our major objectives is to host that Africa CARICOM Summit next year on the grassroots level, to really build those bridges. So, beloved family, please, for those of you who are on, share this live with our people. And we're going to do somewhat of a crash course this evening, where November in Trinidad and Tobago is Black History Month. This month was started by three great black women, Maureen Thompson, Asha Cambon, and Pat McLeod. And it was felt that with Black History Month in America being in February, that February was a month in Trinidad that was punctuated with distractions, in particular with the carnival celebrations. The month of November also is a month where there are teaching opportunities to go through the secondary schools and share information with the young students, especially as the key public holiday for African people, Emancipation Day, takes place during the school holiday. So every year we take the opportunity to, as best as we can, try to reach as many of our young people as possible for Black History Month in November in Trinidad and Tobago. And we, of course, extend the consciousness throughout the entire Caribbean, literally anywhere and everywhere where our people are. But the first key point that we want to make about Black history is that it is not simply an academic indulgence that gives us stories that could excite us about the glorious past that we would have had. But really, it is us being shown a mirror of what we're capable of accomplishing. It is very important that our black children in particular, going through the educational system, become reacquainted with the greatness, the glory that they once had. This is one of the problems with the educational system. Now, from a sociological point of view, there are two main, what they call macro theories, or theories that cover the entire society. You have a theory called functionalism and a theory called conflict theory, which is synonymous with Marxism. And in every single aspect of social life, be it health, law, politics, the economy, education, national security, agriculture, food production, whatever aspect of society there is, you can look at it from one particular perspective. So functionalism says that all different agencies and institutions within the society are interconnected, interrelated with one another, and assist each other in achieving the overall objective of the maintenance of the whole. So the education system gives qualifications to the doctors in the healthcare system. The doctors in the healthcare system ensure the health of the members of the protective services, the police and the soldiers and the coast guards, and the police, the soldiers and coast guards as officers of the law, members of the protective services, in return, ensure that the economy is safe by providing that security, and then the economy in turn makes sure that all the judges and magistrates, attorneys and lawyers within the legal system are properly paid, and then the legal system in turn has to make sure that everyone else in the society gets justice. So it's like a web of functional institutions that each support one another in a system. But when you look at the same function of education from a conflict theory point of view, it says, well, wait a minute. Yes, education provides qualifications for the professionals in healthcare, in law, in politics, in economics, etc. But from the conflict theory point of view, it examines the reality of social class differences, and by the fact that within capitalist society, a tiny minority elite 1% few are in control of the means and the forces of production, and the majority who are minimum wage earners or semi-skilled or unskilled laborers are forever locked in a dependency cycle in need of a salary that barely affords you survival. And so there's conflict. But the conflict theory says that the purpose of the education system in this particular matrix is to preserve the status quo as it is. So the Marxist, from Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels, classical thinkers like Ralph Dahrendorf and Louis Althusser, Jürgen Habermas, Nikos Palantzas, Eric Olin Wright, neo-Marxist philosophers such as these believe that the reason that there is an educational system in a capitalist society is to ensure that the rich stay rich and that the poor remain poor, and that there is the occasional, every so often, temporary upward and downward social mobility that loosens class solidarity. So every now and then, someone from the bottom makes it to the top, and someone from the top would fall down to the bottom, and then the public can say, but look, you see, if you work hard within the system and obey the law, you can be successful. When the statistics mathematically do not permit the poor earning or gaining that kind of success because of the triangular shape of the social structure. Now, that is a conflict theory, sociological perspective on how the educational system maintains inequality and justifies injustice in the minds of those who are treated as second and third class citizens. Now, we want to apply that same principle and perspective to black consciousness. And you see, every time Black History Month comes around, but not so much Black history, especially emancipation, we tend to go into the history book of Africa and talk about some of the great things that African people accomplished and simply reside back in a kind of euphoric dream state to imbue ourselves with a kind of self-induced seduction of contentment and say, oh, this is what we did in the past. See how great we were. See what we did back then. But we totally disconnect the essential narrative and the teaching of that black history that tells us in this modern day time, A, look at what you can do now. This is what you are capable of today. This is what you must achieve and accomplish in the future. And the thing is, all these celebrations of black history and emancipation have cut off that connection to that enlightening idea that would propel, motivate, inspire, and springboard our black youth to take over the commanding heights of the economy. And see, that part of the conversation right there, that is what they don't want you to talk about at all. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said on history that there is no need to look back into history unless what we're looking at historically has a bearing on what we are living right now. Why should I even bother to read a history book to make me smile about what my ancestors and forefathers and foremothers were able to achieve and accomplish, but I cannot take that and use it to add to my arsenal of inspiration and allow that to catapult me into a success that I may not have achieved ordinarily? What sense does it make to go back into the past, feel good about the past based on how great we were, but then come back into the present and feel upset about the current reality because of how capable we are today? No. And that is why when it comes to black studies, black history is just one chapter out of 10. But see, they want to make black history the be-all and end-all of everything, which is wrong. There has to be black economics. So when you take the black history and that you can show what we did in our history, we could apply it to the black economic situation to change impoverishment, pain, and poverty into empowerment and prosperity. What about black politics, where we study the early philosophers of the pioneers of the Caribbean, Dr. Eric Williams of Trinidad and Tobago, Michael Manley of Jamaica, Errol Barrow of Barbados, and Forbes Burnham of Guyana, and connected with the cultures of the early African pioneers, Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana, Jomo Kenyatta of Kenya, and Patrice Lumumba of the Congo, as well as Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, and even Nelson Mandela down in South Africa, and how each of these different leaders used their office to empower their people instead of uplifting and supporting businesses that turn around and exploit the masses of the African people. But they summon and invite our politicians into meetings to give them instructions, and then the politicians give their staff instructions, and then we're given the ultimate instruction to just go and vote and turn the revolving door so that they could play musical chairs again with different oppressors. Hell no. So there also has to be black psychology, so that when we study the history and how the rewriting of that history was used as a mental assault against us, we have to study the psychology of how to get out of it, in the same way that we have to study the black sociology. So we could look at the black community and all aspects and dimensions of it so that we'll be better equipped to solve our problems. But in addition, again, to accompany the black history, there has to be black ideology and black philosophy. So the point I'm making is that you cannot isolate black history. It has to be a foundation for the black economics, the black politics, the black psychology, the black philosophy. So, think, beloved. Dr. John Henrik Clark, one of our greatest historians, said that history was like a clock, and a clock measures time. And if you examine your history and see your evolutionary progress towards development and upliftment and how measured it is, it's supposed to serve you with a roadmap of where you should be in the present. Dr. Leonard Jeffries said, "Whoever controls the images controls your self-esteem, your self-respect, and self-development. Whoever controls the history controls the vision." Do you think it's an accident that there were such heavy investments into how we think about Africa? Do you think it's an accident that in the African diaspora, in the Americas and Europe, where black people live, It was so important that they raised our levels of confidence in Europe more so than in Africa, because what they did not want was a mass migration of human capital and qualified human resource to build and develop Africa. Remember, we black people built America for free. And as far as Europe is concerned, they got the wealth of Africa for free. So the African people now are in a situation where we have to get back the wealth that was stolen from us. You see, this is really an expose on the hypocrisy of migration. Because if you and I are next door neighbors, and I fall asleep, and you jump over my fence, and you get help from someone who passes the fridge over the fence, the stove over the fence, the furniture set, the television, the microwave oven, and all the other household appliances. And then when I wake up now, my whole house is empty. But I see on the camera that it all went over the fence into your house. Then I now have to go back over that fence to take back what was mine. But you call in the police for me to say, hey, there's an intruder in my house, but you already stole from me. That is the story of migration of people of African descent into Europe and America. You stole our jewels. You raped our wealth. You diminished our human resource. You mass murdered our people, in particular the young population, putting a brain drain on Africa and the Caribbean. You have taken our raw materials and used technology to process them, engage in manufacturing and production, and then ship them back to us. And then you put in place your puppet governments that would ensure an economically favorable arrangement of trade and business, so that when you take our cocoa and you take it across the Atlantic Ocean and package it in a wrapper and call it Cadbury's or Hershey's, and then send it back to Africa or back to the Caribbean, you have political puppets in office who are going to ensure that passageways are opened up for your products. So now we are taking back what is ours, but it starts off with waking up first. And with that kind of consciousness now, they are setting up barriers against African consciousness so that you will remain asleep to those particular truths. This is the world that we live in today. It's like there are guard dogs against black consciousness. So Mama Kefa Nephthys said, to illuminate our real African history is to clarify our African present and to brilliantly project our African future. Billions of dollars a year are pumped into the propaganda machine to keep black people ignorant of the truth about their history and condition. But we have to ask the question, now, what effect does this have on an entire people who are made to feel alienated from the land of their origin? The great Frantz Fanon, who wrote that magnificent book, Black Skin, White Mask, in 1952, said, the Negro enslaved by his inferiority, the white man enslaved by his superiority, alike behave in accordance with a neurotic orientation. Both of them are victims. But we are the more visible victims. And we, black as we are, have adopted a white mindedness that contributes towards the white agenda. And you know, I've said this on a number of occasions, people, not so much within the last 5 or 10 years, but in the early days, people would ask me, Brother David, you have a program on radio and television, and now a whole radio station and an organization called the Black Agenda. People have always asked me, Brother David, how would you feel if someone were to establish a program called the White Agenda? And I think to myself and say, interesting question. What's interesting about the question is the fact that it would even be asked. Because while they say, Brother David, you have a black agenda, how would you feel if someone had a white agenda? But there already has been a white agenda. That's what you learned in school. So the black agenda might be heard just once or twice a week. Some of it might be published in a book and then circulated. It may be placed on a website and that information disseminated. But the white agenda is what you learned when you opened up your social studies textbook and it told you that Christopher Columbus discovered Trinidad and other parts of the Caribbean when there were people already here. The white agenda was very clearly being disseminated when we as children opened those illustrated Bibles and saw the false images of a white Jesus. And the white agenda was when they reinforced all of their television programs and images that Noah, Abraham, David, Solomon, Lot, and Moses were white, when in truth and in fact, they were all African people who lived in Africa. They were all black. But the white agenda also denied us the knowledge that black people invented science, physics, chemistry, biology, mathematics, algebra, geometry, arithmetic, art, and architecture. And they take all of those sciences and put them under the names Socrates and Pythagoras and Charles and Boyle and Einstein and Newton. The white agenda was when they gave us this image of Africa as us being savages swinging on trees, like apes and gorillas and monkeys, with no language, uncivilized. That was the white agenda, when the truth is that the first schools, libraries, colleges, and learning centers were all built in Africa. So you telling me about having a black agenda when there always has been a white agenda, you have been a subscriber to the white agenda? Continue to share this, people. Our people listening on Facebook, share it around. Dr. Asa Hilliard says, teaching and research should begin, in most instances, from an examination of power teaching. Children, no matter what their racial or ethnic background, should be presented with pictures of the real world. This is how we can support accurate perception. Then Dr. Hilliard goes on to say, in addition, this is how we... All right, welcome back. This is second part of our presentation on Black history as the terrible internet connection. For the longest while, I was to mention this on a radio or television program or even live on social media, the really terrible fourth world internet service that Flo gives, and really all of the others. I mean, you need to have at least three different internet connections in your home for when one becomes unreliable. But right now, all are unreliable. And we're using a hotspot from another telephone. It's just really something else. But we were making the point about Black History Month and November in Trinidad and Tobago being Black History Month and the importance of Black history. There is a first part to this presentation on the Facebook page. I ask you to please share this as well. Of course, our numbers have dropped down, and I imagine that a lot of people are suffering the same fate. Okay. So, one of the important narratives of Black history is the declaration that the Black man is the original man, the first human being, the maker, the owner, the cream of the planet Earth, God of the universe, according to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. This is one of the most inspiring facts, that Black people were the first people in every part of the planet, not just Africa, but everywhere on this planet where human beings are found, Black people were the first people there. I want you to think about that. Black people were the first people to be found on every part of the planet. The first Europeans were a black people called the Grimaldis. The first Indians were a black people called the Dravidians. The first Australians and New Zealanders were a black people called the Aborigines. According to the research of people like Professor Ivan Van Sertima, there were African people in the Americas long before the whites came and even long before the Native American Indians. There's evidence of stone pyramids and Olmec heads with the faces of strong African features that were carved out by the early Africans who came before Columbus. And anywhere that you go on planet Earth, there is some either historical, geological, or anthropological evidence that African people were there first. There's a people in Japan called the Ainu people, and also in Russia, the Sakhalin. These people, a black people, date back in the earliest history of each of those regions. The first people in China, according to, and we have on The Time and What Must Be Done, part 29, by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he speaks of the earliest occupants of Asia, a small black pygmies who came into the region about 50,000 years ago. That means 46,000 years before the yellow and the brown man were there. When I was in Saudi Arabia and we were being given a tour of the castle of King Abdulaziz, the tour guide was explaining to us about the arrival of all of the different Arab tribes that came to the city of Riyadh, and that their king Abdulaziz had united all of the tribes and ended the conflict between them. And he would spoke about the tribes who came from north, who came from the south, who came from the west, who came from the east. And similar to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, the king Abdulaziz was able to settle all of their conflict and differences. And I remember asking the tour guide, the son of Imam Yasin Abu Bakr, Radanfa Abu Bakr, he was right there in our delegation from the TTFA. I asked the tour guide, I said, what about those ones, the very dark skinned, the black ones? When did they come to Riyadh? And the tour guide said to me, oh, no. They were already here. No. They were here when all the other tribes came. That's how it is with Israel. That's how it is with the region called Palestine. That's how it is with the region called Egypt. That entire Middle East, jet black, dark-skinned African people were the original inhabitants of all of those places. Dark-skinned African people were the original Jews. Dark-skinned African people were the original Hebrews. And that history, which is ancient, has been obscured by the narratives that have been written by all of the arriving tribes and conquering peoples who would have placed themselves in the center of the syllabus or the curriculum for the purpose of inspiring their children. Think, if we as African people were the original inhabitants of all of these regions, but then people come after us and then they set up schools for their children to learn, do you think they're going to talk about you in their history books for their children, or do you think they're going to talk about themselves? Clearly, they're going to talk about themselves, even if it means redrafting or restructuring the narrative. You know, another great black man that I want to tell us about really quickly, and I still want to end at the standard time, is W.E.B. Du Bois, who was the first black man to get a PhD in America, but he was also the first black sociologist. And at a time when it was believed that black people were just backward and inferior and no good and less capable and unintelligent, he, through social science, use the sociological methodologies of surveys, interviews, questionnaires, participant and non-participant observation, social experiments, and he studied the black community. And he showed that there are pure external forces that create problems internally for the black community. And that those problems and challenges are blamed on the victims, and then they lodge and archive the blame in the books. This is a disturbing but real reality. And W.E.B. Du Bois, as that first black sociologist who uncovered a lot of this information, which was a major step towards ending racism, they started to treat him like an enemy of the state. W.E.B. Du Bois had this philosophy of a talented tenth within our community that must be pushed to the limits of achievement in academics so that they can become our scientists, our politicians, our teachers, our leaders. And let me begin to wind down with this thought, and I want you to think deeply on this one. W.E.B. Du Bois, of course, they charged him, accused him of communism, and the FBI spied on him, etc. Just like they do with so many of our greats. But I want you to think for a moment. Think deeply on this, what I'm about to share with you. It's about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I want you to think of just last week or so, this grand announcement was made by Mark Zuckerberg of the changes in Facebook. And I want you to think for a moment about the kind of human resources would have been required to make Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and Twitter the great economic success that they are. Think of how many people would have been needed with university degrees and masters and PhDs and degrees and certificates and diplomas in business administration and accounting. Think of how many hundreds of people, maybe even thousands of people, he would have needed in order to make such a successful firm like that, which they're apparently about to change to Meta or whatever name. Now, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a chain of businesses. They had a series of black-owned supermarkets. And the food being sold on the shelves came from the black-owned farms that the followers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad established through growing their own food. And then there was a chain of restaurants and bakeries, and the food that was being prepared in the restaurants and bakeries was from the supermarkets, and the food on the shelves of the supermarkets was from the black-owned farms. Black-owned farms, black-owned supermarkets, black-owned restaurants, black-owned bakeries. But they also had black-owned clothing stores and cloth stores. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad also built schools, clinics, and they did business and trade. Representatives of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam would be sent overseas to meet with heads of government of independent countries to discuss doing trade with the black community. The Nation of Islam were the number one importers of frozen fish in the early 1970s. But hear the point. The point is this. In order to establish such a successful business enterprise, and in addition to that, publish books, publish newspapers, circulate them all across the United States, have planes and long, those extra long shipping trucks, all of that. Think of the degree of expertise that you will need in order to run a successful operation like that. Think of how many people with degrees, masters, PhDs, diplomas, and certificates in business and accounting and supervision and administration. Well, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was able to do all of that with no one with a degree, but with drug addicts, criminals, ex-convicts, vagrants, homeless people, drug addicts, bums, people lying on the street, just come out of jail. He took people like that, black people, and taught them a knowledge of themselves. And just with that knowledge, no qualifications, degrees, masters, PhDs, certificates, or diplomas, knowledge of self, black people. And with that knowledge of self, he was able to create and establish an economic empire. Come on. What could our children achieve if they were to be given that knowledge of self as a root knowledge? When there's more encouragement of the hatred of the blackness of their skin through some of the images and what they learn in this school system. Imagine what we can accomplish with knowledge of self and unity, love for one another. So history is revealed as the human practice of self, social, and world construction. It does not just happen, but it is the work of unseen forces. Black history is a fundamental paradox that society that was built for freedom often becomes a context for suppression, exploitation, and oppression of us as black people. But history reveals itself as the mirror and avenue for human struggle and progress through which we can look to discover and know ourselves, our possibilities, and our capabilities. When someone hires the services of a lawyer, the lawyer asks them, he needs to know if they have some kind of criminal past or criminal record. Or you go to visit the doctor. The doctor might determine your current health condition today by what you've been suffering from over the last few weeks, months, and years. You need to know your history. It gives you a bearing on today. The great Marcus Garvey said, a people without a knowledge of their history is like a tree without roots. But we have added to that, that a people who do not properly document their history run the risk of having that history rewritten for them and rewritten in the best interest of the one who's doing the rewriting. The consequence of this is that our history is being distorted and the legacy of the people is being slowly lost. Marcus Garvey said, Africa for the Africans at home and abroad. But Africa has been there for everyone to go in and take what they want. This is why black consciousness is feared. No one feels uncomfortable about a Chinese man teaching Chinese people Chinese history. No one feels uncomfortable about a Jewish man teaching Jewish people Jewish history. No one feels uncomfortable about an Asian man teaching Asian people Asian history. But when it comes to a black man teaching black people black history, there's this connotation of uprising, revolution, rebellion, subversiveness, disturbance, being unfriendly, not cooperating, being up to something, something sinister about to happen. We need to be in fear. We have to have hidden microphones and cameras and bugs. All of that for a black man sharing his consciousness with other black people. And the reason for that is because so many have prospered off the exploitation of black people. But this does not only apply to teaching and learning, we must also support black businesses and financial institutions. And this again may be labeled as racist for just discussing it. But while we're discussing it, other ethnic groups are doing it, living it, and being it. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said in Message to the Black Man, love of self comes first. The one who tries to love everybody is the one who does not love anyone. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us a blueprint for black economics. And that is what we need to do today. So Black History Month, November in Trinidad and Tobago, is not just for the reciting of ancient narratives. Think, people. Black History Month, which is November in Trinidad and Tobago, is a period whereby we must connect the black history of yesterday with the black economics of today to set a pathway for the black sociology and psychology of the future. The black history of the past must be reconnected with the black contemporary social experiences of the present, so that it can chart a new course of education for our children in the future, which will spell entrepreneurship and ownership. So the history cannot just be cut off. It must remain attached and connected to our political system so that justice for the masses of the people can be a number one priority rather than service to the business investors and finances. The history of yesterday must inspire and motivate the youth of today, so that tomorrow they can do much better than we have ever done in any part of our lifetime. Kathy Hughes said, in explaining the concepts of history, heritage, and hope, she said, history is what happened to us in the past. Heritage is what in the present we understand about our history, but hope is what we give to the future based on what happened to us in the past and what we understand about our past. And so this Black History Month is a time period where we have to take advantage of teaching opportunities. Africa is the geographical location where the first human beings existed. But yet still some black people say, I'm not African. And we try to replace and substitute all different kinds of sub-identities with being black. You cannot do that. Anyone with any recognizable African traits or features is an African and has just as much a claim and link to the lineage of African heritage than any other African. But because of how Africa has been portrayed negatively through the Western media to poison the minds of audiences, we have divorced ourselves from it subconsciously. That is a relationship that needs to be mended and repaired. We cannot continue to live like that. The brainwashed African tries to psychologically escape from being black because of the subconscious assault on the image of Africa itself. That is for us to repair. We are victims of mental slavery. And the desire to not be identified by the immediate identifiable features and characteristics of who you are is the textbook definition of self-hate. So as Bob Marley said, we have to emancipate ourselves from mental slavery because none but ourselves can free our minds. Someone else can unlock you if you're chained to somewhere physically, but no one else can free your mind unless you are a willing participant in the liberation process. This is what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan means to us today, the entire black world, the entire African diaspora. That fearlessness in sharing and spreading knowledge. And let me announce that all Nation of Islam mosques headquarters will be resuming their Sunday meetings in total for the first time after 18 months on Sunday, November the 14th, 2021. We in Trinidad at the Kwame Ture Center, which is the Nation of Islam Eastern Caribbean headquarters, we will be, for the first time in 18 months, resuming our weekly Nation of Islam Sunday lectures. That will be from 11 o'clock at the Kwame Ture Center on Sunday, November 14th. Of course, we will be at 25% capacity. Our Friday Juma continues as well from 1 p.m. on Fridays. And also put down the date, November 27th. Saturday, November 27th for African Expo number 10. Beloved, last weekend, we successfully hosted our 9th African Expo. And now we're on to number 10 for Black History Month in November. We look forward so much to that. And of course, we urge you to go to the website, www.blackagendaproject.com. Order your copy of Black Studies. You could either order the hard copy. We ship out every Monday, first thing Monday morning. We do all our shipping out. Also, the books Knowledge is Power is available. Black Youth at Risk is available. We have special packages. What you can actually do, as someone did today, you can contact us on WhatsApp on 868-332-0214. If you contact us directly on WhatsApp, you can purchase the books at a special package price, and we will send you the invoice. You can pay the invoice right there on the spot, and then we ship out on Monday as normal. But someone was able to get all the books at half price today by contacting us directly through WhatsApp. And we sent out the invoice, they paid the invoice, we ship out the books first thing Monday. And once again, the WhatsApp number is 868-332-0214. All go straight to the website, www.blackagendaproject.com. But the number again, 868-332-0214. All right, so this was a very challenging evening, all the technical issues, the technical difficulties, but we're still very, very grateful for your remaining with us. We got bumped off and we are back on, and we're thankful for those of you who came back. All right. We also started just a couple minutes late because of that same problem with the terrible service that we're receiving. We actually had someone come in and change the equipment, believe it or not, with Flo about 5 days ago. Believe it or not. That's a whole other, I don't even want to start talking about that. But, so our apologies on behalf of the internet service providers. Really doing a terrible job, Flo in the Caribbean. And they make so much money, they can definitely afford to upgrade multiple times. And of course, we're not the only ones. Many people, in fact, send us a message and let us know if you've been having internet problems as well. All right, because for on an average week, I do sometimes as much as 20 hours of online teaching. All right. So thank you so much for being in our viewing and listening audience. I'm on 91.9 FM Saturday morning, 7 to 9. I'm on Gael TV Sunday evenings, 8 p.m. And it's repeated on Tuesday evenings, 8 p.m., Wednesday mornings, 9 p.m. And then I'm back here live on social media these days on the page of the Black Agenda Project every Wednesday evening at this time. And, of course, on Time for an Awakening online radio, part of the Black Talk Radio Network out of Philadelphia. Thank you, beloved family. May Almighty God, Allah, continue to bless you. As I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum.